We'll get Brock started. He's very good. We'll see what we can do. Brock, take it away on 13, if you would, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac, because that's the point I was going to make. The deer and elk ones are, I mean, those are the big items. So we'll get started with the bighorn, sheep, moose, and mountain goats. I do need to start, as we enter into our discussions about, you know, our ungulate populations, I do need to take a quick moment. COVID presented a lot of challenges in 2020. We're all aware of that. And our work was not immune to that. And so our agency had, the wildlife program had adopted a policy that, you know, given concerns with COVID and staff safety and putting folks in a very confined space in a helicopter or a fixed wing, we adopted a policy to only do aerial surveys in instances where the information was directly related to developing a recommendation and or there was no alternative approach we could take. For example, we didn't do a lot of our mule deer surveys, but staff were able to get out on the ground and do ground surveys, and we could get that same information, but in a different way. And I have to give out a shout out to our staff because they did a great job adapting to that, as well as our tribal co-managers who in several situations stepped up and did the survey on our behalf. The other kind of victim was our harvest stats. We do not have complete final harvest estimates yet. And that was because we partner with Washington State University to do a survey of non-compliant hunters so that we can correct our compliant data. They were not at full capacity because of COVID, and they were not able to meet the traditional deadlines that we have established with them. Hopefully that data will be available before the April meeting for adoption. All right, bighorn, sheep, moose, and mountain goats. We've got five WACs covered here. We've got our auction and raffle and incentive permit WAC. We've got our special hunting season permits, and then we've got moose, bighorn, and mountain goat seasons. This is what we'll cover today. So first, with special hunting season permits, the first proposal is to allow successful applicants for all big game special permits to return their permit to the department for any reason 2 weeks prior to the opening day of the season and to have their preference points restored. The second proposal was to remove the once-in-a-lifetime restriction for mountain goat conflict reduction special permit category. We'll cover that when we get to mountain goats. It's related to efforts to assist with the removal of mountain goats from the Olympic Peninsula, and we'll cover it in more detail in a little bit. So we got 1,553 respondents, 77% indicated agreement. We had 14% that were opposed, 223 comments, one email. Most comments that provided specific topic were advocating for reissuing the permit. That was a lack of confusion as they read through the proposal, because that is what we are proposing to do, is if a hunter turns in their permit, we're going to go down the line, you know, the list of unsuccessful applicants and reissue that permit to the first hunter that's willing to take it. Others advocated for you need to make it sooner than 2 weeks. And the argument for that was coming from the perspective of the next hunter on the list, because if you call them at 2 weeks and give them 2 weeks notice that they can go on a hunt, that doesn't leave them much time to plan. And then lastly, we had some comments that said, don't change anything, keep it the same way, and don't allow hunters to do this. So moose, gonna blow through the status. We have minor recommendations. We have several administrative changes to remove unnecessary hunt notes. We're proposing to increase bull permits in GMU 108. That's summarized in the table below. It's an increase of two permits across those two hunts. We're proposing to reduce antlerless permits in game management units 117 and 121. That's by four antlerless permits across those four hunts. Proposing to remove the hunter education incentive permit, proposing to change the legal animal for auction and raffle permit holders from any moose to any bull, and propose to expand the hunt area for raffle permit holders to include all areas that are open to moose hunting. We had 2,027 respondents to our online survey. 68% indicated agreement, 11% were opposed. We received 223 comments, all came from our online survey. The biggest theme that was in those comments was concerns about predators and the effects predators are having on our moose populations. On that status update slide, I did summarize the results from recent research that we had done in GMUs 117 and 124. 117 had known pack of wolves, 124 did not. In both study areas, populations were declining. Adult females were in poor body condition. We had poor calf survival. And we also identified issues with tick infestations. So the findings from that work indicate that although predators are definitely part of the equation, removing those predators may not necessarily mean that we'll reverse the trajectories of those populations. We also had other comments that were advocating for further reductions in antlerless harvest. We had some folks that were opposed to the increase in bull permits of 108. Some folks were opposed to removing the hunter incentive permit. The reason we proposed removing that permit and changing the legal animal for auction raffle from any moose to any bull was in response to concerns about equity. We had reduced opportunities to harvest antlerless moose for all other hunters. So we probably should do it for those special incentive opportunities as well. Some folks felt like we needed more research and monitoring and then more opportunity for youth, senior, and disabled. The auction raffle, almost 2,200 respondents, 64%. Indicated agreement, 14% were opposed, received 201 comments, all from the online survey. Another, the main theme again here was predators, because our proposal in the auction raffle was related to moose. We had a lot of folks that expressed opposition just to the overall concept of offering auction and raffle permits. Some folks didn't think we should have removed the antlerless. We should have kept it as any moose. And then followed right behind that, several comments agreed with removing the antlerless option. Expand the hunt area and or permits. These were actually comments that thought we should increase the area to include the entire state and or we should increase the number of auction raffle permits that we offer. And then others were opposed to expanding the hunt area. And then three tribal comments related to tribal hunting. So mountain goat, pretty minor changes here. We have several administrative changes to reduce unnecessary footnotes and standardize the naming convention for hunt areas within the rule. We're proposing to reduce the number of permits in three of our hunt areas by one permit from two to one. And the reason we're doing that is if you review the status slide that I had before, we have very clear guidelines that we follow. We got to have at least 100 goats. We can't harvest more than 4%, and we can't nanny harvest can't be more than 1.2%. So based on our most recent survey, that warranted a reduction of one permit in these three areas. Most other recommendations are associated with our efforts to assist with the removal of mountain goats from the Olympic Peninsula. I think we're all aware of that effort. Prior to this year, it was all translocation efforts. It will be shifting to an lethal aerial removal effort beginning this summer. Less than 80 goats are thought to remain within areas outside of Olympic National Park. We've been meeting with the Park Service, and we've agreed that this first year when they do lethal aerial removals, they will not target those goats outside of the park. So it gives our hunters an opportunity to assist with that removal. But next year, they will go in and actively target. So to facilitate this opportunity, we reinstated the conflict reduction category. We removed the once in a lifetime restriction. Anybody can put in for these permits and participate. The bag limit will be 2 goats of any sex or age. It will not require the gender identification test. And the hunt area will be GMU 621, 636, and 638. And then we identified 3 hunts that'll occur through the months of September through October, and 25 permits across those 3 hunts. We wanted to provide more permits, but there were concerns. Most of the goats are going to be found around Mount Elanor, and that's a very popular hiking location. And so we were very sensitive to, you know, the number of hunters that we would be sending potentially into that area with all that recreation that's going on. I see.
Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up, please.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a second year since the first translocations. Do we have a sense of how those goats are doing? Because we were trying to bolster some units that were in decline. Do we have information? I didn't see any of those units had a change in the bag limit or anything. When will we start seeing that impact?
So the impact that potentially might come of that, even when we started it, would be many years down the road. And so we're not seeing anything right now. We're not proposing any changes. The final tally on goats translocated, I think, was about 375. As expected, survival of those translocated goats, I don't want to throw out a number because I don't want to misspeak, but it's not as high as it is for goats that haven't been translocated, but we anticipated that, especially within that first year that they were released. That's been well documented, so that wasn't unexpected. We continue to monitor those goats. They all have GPS collars on. A lot of our tribal co-managers go in and investigate mortalities, and we're still keeping track of all that information. All right, public comment. We had 1,900 respondents to our online survey. 61% indicated support, 14% were opposed. We received 160 comments through our online survey and received 3 written communications. Folks advocated for improving our survey methodology. We proposed those reductions in those 3 permit areas because of our survey results, and they thought our survey results were flawed. Some folks were opposed to removing the once-in-a-lifetime restriction. We felt like that was appropriate to do because, again, there's very few goats in this area that remain. We want them to target any goats that they see. And so if we had retained the once-in-a-lifetime restriction, we would have to deal with a situation where a hunter may harvest a kid because we've asked them to do that, but then they, you know, they can't put in for a normal special mountain goat permits because they've harvested a goat. Others agreed with that recommendation. Some folks were advocating for more opportunity based on their observations in certain areas. They feel like there's more goats out there than what we think, or that there's enough goats in some areas that we don't have hunt areas that could sustain a harvest opportunity. We had some concerns about tribal hunting, about predators, and then some folks advocated for opening the season in August. I think we would be hesitant to ever really consider that because I think we run into concerns about the ability of hunters to get, you know, a harvested goat off the mountain and out of those remote areas before it, you know, it wasted because it's very hot during that time of year. So moving to bighorn sheep, our biggest concern for bighorn sheep is obviously MOVI. We have 3 herds that have active outbreaks right now: Yakima Canyon, Mount Hull, and then most recently this past fall, we had an outbreak occur in Clemon Mountain. So rule changes, we have several administrative changes to improve the readability of the WAC. We ordered by hunt area number. We removed unnecessary footnotes, and we added youth and hunters with disabilities categories rather than using footnotes. to indicate those permit opportunities. We added language to the definition for juvenile ram to clarify all reference points are based on viewing the ram directly from a 90 degree angle. We added one ram permit for Vulcan. We added one ram permit in 169 and one ram permit in 172. 169 and 172 are down in the Hells Canyon, down in the Blues Mountains. We have not had those permit opportunities, but since we've cleared those herds of Moby, those numbers are starting to increase, and they've reached a point where we can start offering limited harvest opportunity for rams. And then we reduced the ram permits in Clemmon Mountain from 5 to 4. All other recommendations are related to our efforts to implement a test and remove program in the Yakima Canyon herd. So the Yakima Canyon herd, it consists of two sub-herds, the Umtanum and Sela Butte. The initial Moby outbreak occurred in 2010. Since that time, we've documented chronically depressed lamb recruitment. We've been trying to reduce the herd to increase the likelihood that test and remove is successful. So for the past 2 or 3 years, we've been offering a fairly large number of ewe permits and juvenile ram permits, trying to bring that population down. We initiated our first capture and marking effort this February. At that time, based on what the capture crews documented while they were doing that work, we estimated the herd is still at approximately 130 individuals. So we still need to bring that population down. We captured 80 bighorn at that time. Two died of capture-related causes. We marked the other 78. Of those 78, seven came back positive, one came back indeterminate. So our recommendations, we developed them with the objective of reducing the herd size down to 100, again, attempting to do that, and removing as many unmarked bighorn as possible. Because now as we move into test and remove, we want to be able to start document disease history of these individuals. And individuals that are positive, they're going to be targeted for removal in the future. So the fewer unmarked animals we have next spring, the less work that we have to do to capture that disease history. So these are all presented as recommended adjustments. And the reason is because, as I mentioned, these capture efforts occurred in February. They didn't wrap up till February 28th. So we didn't have the information that I presented today prior to filing the 102. And so we used that information to inform this recommendation, and it's presented in your packet as an adjustment. We also adjusted the season dates to minimize hunter numbers and overlap with our mature ram permits. And then, as I mentioned before, we will encourage hunters to harvest unmarked bighorn. So to do that, historically, the permits that we offered in these two subherds, they were specific. Each herd area was divided into 2 or 3 hunt zones. And so now, if you draw one of these permits, you will not be assigned to a hunt zone. You're just going to be assigned to a herd area. The other thing that we are doing is shifting them back. We don't have very many juvenile rams left on the landscape, and even fewer that are unmarked. So we are now switching the permits back to a legal animal, can be a ewe or a juvenile ram. The overall number of permits is still pretty much the same. It's just the area and what their legal animal that they can take is what's changing. Okay, so for bighorn sheep public comment, again, these comments aren't going to be related to the recommended adjustments because they weren't presented to the public at that time. So we had 1,933 respondents to our online survey. 67% indicated agreement, 9% were opposed. We received 119 comments all through the online survey. We didn't have any theme that had a lot of comments. They were scattered across many different themes. Some of them were to remove the juvenile ram permits. They didn't think we should be offering those because too many hunters are taking rams that are not true juveniles. Some folks thought we needed to improve the juvenile ram identification criteria beyond what we already did. A lot of folks expressing concern about MOVI, concerns about tribal hunting predators, and then some advocated for either no hue hunts or that we shouldn't be allowing bighorn sheep hunts at all. So with that, any questions?
Mr. McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly to double check, you have about 1,900 comments, I think, for the bighorn sheep and the Rocky Mountain sheep. Is that right that there are 1,900 people for both of those, or around that for both of those that went through, that are involved in the survey answering? I mean, that's a tremendous amount of interest. Am I reading that right?
You're reading that right. So those are 1,900 respondents, not comments, but folks, as we talked before, they went in and selected whether they agreed or disagreed or were neutral.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Real quickly, what we're going to do here is we have three individuals that want to make public comment. I'm going to make the recommendation that when we wrap up this agenda item, after public comment and any commissioner discussions, that we will adjourn for tonight. The importance of, they're all important issues, but number 14 and 15 are particularly important to the public. I think we should all consider doing that while we're fresh and we got hot coffee in front of us in the morning. So do I hear any objections to that strategy?
No.
Okay.
No objections. Support it.
Thank you. Can you ladies speak up? I feel left out now. Okay.
They're tougher than we are.
Molly's smiling, I know, but I know she's going to want to be done too. So, Nikki, could we go to, I think we have three folks that want to make public comment here, and we'll take that and then we'll move on.
Right.
Go ahead.
We'll now take public comment from registered attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 2 minutes. I have Martha Hall, Dale Maggart, and Rachel Bjork. So I'm going to start with Martha first. Go ahead, Martha.
Yes. I want to comment on particularly on two of my favorite animals to see when I'm hiking, and that's moose and mountain goats. They are my two of my very favorites. I go to Montana to see them. People love to see animals that aren't as common, and iconic animals like mountain goats are iconic to the Cascades. To remove any of these when they're already rare has to be questioned, I think, from a standpoint of just what's fair to have on the landscape for people to enjoy, as well as a biological question. Is there a need to hunt anything that's not doing that well? And that's certainly true of goats and can also be said of moose. And yet somebody has to have the right to shoot them. I don't get it. I also think that we need to look at the impact of hunting on species. And I think mountain goats are a great one to look at because they have thrived in the Olympics where they weren't hunted. They've never done that well in the Cascades. They don't even populate some of the areas that provide good goat habitat. And this is a question in the studies that I've read, and I read quite a bit about mountain goats. And why aren't they using all of their habitat that they have, and why are they not doing better in the Cascades? I think that it needs to be checked that we have more and more people like me who hike in the high country, who hike in the meadows, the area that's good goat habitat in the summer. We have climbers, we have people who camp there. When I hike and see a goat, they run the other way. I see them from a distance running, not like what I saw in the Olympics when I saw goats. And is this because there's hunting that they're so different in the Cascades than they are in the Olympics? And is just even minimal hunting triggering this response so that we may think, okay, we're only going to kill a few? I don't know. I think that this changes animals. And I spend a lot of time in the Yellowstone, And I don't see that we displace many animals there from good habitat, like I see when I hike, where I hike and hunting occurs. I think this question needs to be pursued a lot more when we combine hunting with increased recreational use. Second, I think there's also a question of the ethics of selling permits through auctions and raffles with groups sponsoring these, such as Safari International. I went on the websites to look at these raffles and auctions of our wildlife in Washington State, and I was appalled. I don't think this reflects the ethics and values of the people in this state. And Martha? I suggest that all of you look at this this raffle and auction business that this state is in.
Thank you, Martha. We appreciate your comments as always. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have Dale Maggart. Go ahead, Dale.
Hello. Thank you, Larry, for your decision there that you put forward about holding off on the other rest of the topics until tomorrow morning. I think that was an excellent idea there.
And well, thank you all for all of our backs and minds are getting a little bit tired, Dale, but go ahead, please.
And thank you all for what you're doing. It's kind of a tough job. I know it is. And I really don't have a whole lot to say on this topic, so I think I can be pretty brief. I think our moose up here in Northeast Washington, especially north of where I live, and I'm just north of Spokane a little bit, is our numbers up here, our calf recruitment is in the tank, and it's because of our predation. And I know Martha there is got a good heart and everything like that, but if we continue to let the predation take over like it's doing up here, she won't have any moose over here in northeastern Washington to look at, just for darn sure, because eventually they're going to run out of moose, and then they're going to go to the elk and the deer, and they're already going to the cattle. So it's a big issue we have over here. So anyway, that's all I've got. Thanks for everything, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Thank you for your comments, Dale. Have a good evening. Next, Nikki.
All right, last one for today is Rachel Bjork. Go ahead, Rachel.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm going to be brief since you're... Hi, can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me okay? Okay.
Yes.
We can hear you.
Thank you. I'm going to be brief in my comments. I just want to say that I agree with Martha Hall. I really appreciate that. I'm also very concerned about the state of the...
Oh, Rachel, you're cutting out really bad.
Mountain goat population and additionally troubled by the auctioning off of her...
Okay. Thank you, Rachel. We'll perhaps hear from you tomorrow. Vice Chair Baker, I guess we are done now with public comment. Any commissioner discussion for the next 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then we can move on. Vice Chair Baker.
I have a question. I have a question for Brock, if I might. We've heard over and over that it's predation that is causing maybe calf recruitment, or maybe just general tanking of some of these large ungulates. It seems, I remember a couple of years ago, we had a presentation where we were told that the primary killer of moose was ticks. And we had quite a bit of discussion about whether there is anything we could do about that. So now I'm just a little confused. And then I'm also wondering, when we set these seasons, how are we doing the population surveys that we need to do? And I know that you noted that this year was particularly difficult, but my main question is, what is the prime killer of moose in this state? Do I remember that wrong?
So I don't have those specific percentages from that study. I don't think that we can say that ticks were the primary. The other problem when you have like something like a disease or tick infestations and poor body condition, it's hard to sometimes untangle that, right? Even in the case of a predation event, you know, because was the ultimate cause predation, or was it because of the condition of the animal that it predisposed them? We're really close to getting those studies published. They're in review right now. I think within the next few months, they're going to be accepted. And then we're going to be able to share that with folks. But it was primarily being driven by low calf survival. We had low pregnancy rates because of the poor body condition in both study areas. We had poor calf survival in both study areas. Wolves were definitely part of the equation in GMU-117. They accounted for a good number of calf mortalities, without a doubt. But we also had very low calf survival in GMU-124. And there were no wolf, you know, mortalities attributed to in that study area. So even without wolves, our moose population in 124 was struggling as well and was declining annually.
Okay, and then my follow-up is that, and we took that into consideration as we are setting these seasons currently. To Rachel and Martha's point, should we be hunting moose at all right now?
Yeah, if you go back to my status slide, I have a graph in there that shows moose harvest, and you'll see moose harvest substantially declines in 2019. And that was because following those studies, we made substantial reductions in antlerless opportunities because of that. Now, because we saw poor body condition, that's an indicator that potentially there were still, you know, too many moose given what the habitat could carry. So we still maintained some cow harvest because there were indicators that the population still needed to come down potentially before it got into equilibrium with the habitat. We weren't able to do surveys this year, not because of COVID. We actually prioritized the moose survey, but we're having more and more difficult time doing our moose surveys because they are dependent on snow. It's almost not even worth your time to get up and go fly if you don't have a substantial amount of snow on the ground, because you just can't see the darn things. We also are partnering with independent contractors through University of Washington and Montana, University of Montana, to explore a new approach to try to estimate and monitor moose populations as an alternative to our traditional, you know, way of doing it, where we get up in a helicopter and fly around and have to have snow. Because with climate change, I think years of substantial snowfall are going to be less common for us. So we got to start rethinking how we do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Barbara. Go ahead, Fred. Then I have some closing comments. Commissioner Kuntz. You need to unmute, Fred.
Sorry about that. There was a lot of information, so thanks for all that. It was like drinking from the fire hose trying to follow it all. So I had a question, I probably missed it, on the goats. I think you said that population has to be at least 100 and then 4% harvest. Is that right? So I was wondering, that includes I couldn't follow it. That includes the populations that were translocated?
So we have 15 hunt areas identified. Yeah. Some of those goats that were released have ended up in those hunt areas, but we aren't using the released goats to, you know, form a new one. So okay. They go in the North Cascades at different locations. They weren't locations where we have hunts. They were locations where, like Martha has indicated, all of our we did a habitat suitability analysis before the translocation. Okay. And the areas that were identified as these should be good areas for goats. This is good goat habitat, but we don't seem to have very many goats there. So the goats were released there to try to bolster the numbers in those areas that we thought should support more goats. So we have 15 hunt areas, and when we do our surveys, we have to have 100 goats within that hunt area, and then harvest cannot exceed 4% of the adult population.
So what I'm getting at is then what's magical about 100? Why 100?
There was a model. I
know what the effective population size is.
Yeah. So, that work was done probably almost two decades ago now. was work done by our ungulate research scientist. His name was Cliff Rice, and they did a lot. They did a lot of work on mountain goats, and they evaluated population susceptibility to harvest. And that came, that recommendation, those guidelines came from that work.
Commissioner Smith has her hand up.
So I'm concerned about public safety and this proposed hunt around Mount Elanor. What are the dates on that? I mean, that whole area is so heavily used by recreationalists during all those months when you can access it.
Yep. So those hunts will start on September 1st and run. There's three separate hunts, and they basically run continuously through November 30th. And we developed all those recommendations in collaboration with the Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service. And so they were the ones that we were talking to about concerns about conflicts with other recreationists. And that's why we capped the permits at only 10 for two of the hunts and only 5 permits for the other hunt.
Are we going to put up signs at trailheads, et cetera?
I don't know. I could see them potentially doing that. I can bring that up with them as a recommendation. I know they will do messaging, you know, around the issue. Whether they'll actually put a sign up, I'm not sure. I know when we had our discussions with them, they see once we get into fall, you get into October, and I think families are back in school and
in October.
Less opportunity, they see a sharp decline in their activities from recreationists up there. So,
okay. Anish, you want to add something?
Yeah, it's also important to know that these hunts existed before the captures, and we're just reinstating them to maybe possibly do some cleanup to try to reduce those populations further. So it's not a new thing that they're dealing with, the forest.
Thank you for that. Okay, Lorna, is your hand down? It needs to be down now? Okay. Brock, I want to apologize that we're going to have you back tomorrow, but these 14 and 15 are incredibly important to so many people, and we want to get that right. So in advance of that, I want to apologize. I want to thank my colleagues on the commission today. When we get this loaded up with stuff, it gets a little overwhelming sometimes to try and stay on some type of a timeline, and I didn't do a very good job with that today, and I'm unhappy, and I apologize for that. I do want to thank a couple other people. I want to thank all the staff that came in front of us today. The deliveries were superb, gave us a lot of information, generated an awful lot of questions that I think we're going to talk about tomorrow during meeting wrap-up, I expect. And I particularly want to reach out to Joe Podesco, our counselor, providing some texting comments and so on that were helpful. So if there's nothing else that needs to be said, Brock, is your hand up to speak? Okay, go ahead, Brock.
So happy to be here tomorrow. Can I just request a little bit of guidance on the timing? When do you think we'll cover those? First thing in the morning or?
Well, 8 o'clock was public comment from 8 until 9. I would expect we will, you better be ready by 8:30, 8:45, because I don't know how much public comment we're going to get, but you will be engaged no later than 9 a.m. in my view. Does that work?
So I'll be on time. I'll be on at 7:50.
You got time for breakfast and a coffee. So any other closing comments from my colleagues or staff?
I have a comment, Larry. The person that you didn't think is yourself. I think we all have run meetings is my guess. And I've run hundreds of them, but I have never tried to manage all day meetings like this. I can't imagine how tired you must be. And I think we all appreciate you trying as hard as you do.
Good job. Good job.
I very much appreciate that. Thank you for saying it. I didn't feel like I carried the ball very well today, but maybe tomorrow will be better. I can get 6 or 8 hours of sleep, I hope. So,
you did great, Larry.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much for that. Well, listen, I'm going to move to adjourn. Everyone have a nice evening, get some rest, and 8 o'clock in the morning, please. Good night.
Thumbs up.